Hi, queer friends. Are you ready to be inspired? Welcome to Season 5 of Coming Out and Beyond, a podcast that shares stories from the LGBTQIA+ community. Here's your host, Anne-Marie Zanzel.
Hi, this is Anne-Marie Zanzel, and welcome back to another episode of Coming Out and Beyond. And I am excited to introduce Nita Agustin today. Nita is a queer and a gender-affirming clinical counselor based in Burnaby, British Columbia, Canada. Their jam is helping queer youth and young adults find alignment within themselves so they would feel confident showing up in their own skin. We do this by finding words to name their experiences and discover ways to live on their own terms. Nita, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Anne-Marie, for having me here.
It's nice to have you. So tell me, what's your coming out story? What's your story?
Yeah, I sometimes reflect back and I'm wondering if, like, oh my gosh, like, for so many people, the pandemic was such a pressure cooker. And at least that was for me, because in hindsight, I actually felt like I've always looked at women differently ever since I was, like, small, and I can't really pinpoint what age that was. But let's just say that I've always looked at women differently. And I had a really big crush on my close friend, like, when I was in my early 20s. And that's when I actually realized more so, like, and this was still back in the day when I was still a very devout Catholic, and as we all know, you're not supposed to be with the women, this and that. So I always thought there was something seriously wrong with me. Until the pandemic, I was just really, like, I hung out a lot with this one person who turned out to be my ex-girlfriend, basically. And that was my coming out story. I mean, like, I chatted a lot with her as well as with a few friends at the time. And the realization that, and I had, like, close female friends along the way as well. But then typically when we're talking and then you're texting, I remember feeling really jealous, you know, like, seeing her texting someone else. And that's when I clued in, like, oh, wow, like, this is not just, like, a close friendship, but I actually had feelings for this person. Mm-hmm. So, like, yeah, like, that was, like, my coming out story.
So what surprised you about that, that you had feelings for this person? Now, you grew up in Indonesia. And so can you help our listeners understand what it's like to be a queer person in Indonesia? Because you need that background to understand all this.
Yeah. I guess, like, Indonesia is an archipelago country nestled in Southeast Asia. It's pretty close to Australia. It's a conservative, predominant, like, country, and it's pretty collectivistic. And for those of you who are not as familiar with the difference between individualistic and collectivistic culture, is that I feel like in the West we can just be almost whoever we are, but in Indonesia I feel like there's always so much consideration towards other people, and that was always the hiccup, I guess, like, in me thinking about my tendency towards women back in the day growing up. It's a very cis heteronormative environment where also trans are, like, people who dress up as the other sex, like, are not, like, they're seen more like as a joke, you know. And actually being gay is seen as a disease. And that's just what I've heard, like, growing up. And that's where I'm like, oh, wow. Like, that's why I think, like, along the way when I realized I actually had leanings or predispositions towards same sex, I was like, did I have some kind of, like, abnormalities or disorder? Because growing up, I dated guys before, but whenever we got intimate, like, it just never felt right. And mm-hmm. I always said there was something wrong with me, because I dated, like, two really hot dudes. Like, it was, like, you know, like, back in the day in high school, it's mm-hmm. like, oh, yeah, like, these are the it guys, you know. And I dated the it guys, but I just did not have the same sensations as I should have, I guess. And I know probably like actually backtrack a few seconds. My response is like meandering a little bit from your initial question.
Well, but you know, so I have a question of curiosity. You're Catholic. So
I was a Catholic.
Okay, so you were Catholic. Is Indonesia a big Catholic country? Because I don't think of it that way.
No, and I think like even my faith and spirituality, I actually feel like I'm still searching, I'm sort of deconstructing. I was actually born and raised as a Buddhist, and then I was converted into Catholicism. And 4 years ago, when I decided to embrace my queerness, that's when I kind of like part ways with Catholicism. Yeah, but this is like a predominantly Muslim country, and we have
That's what I thought.
Muslim population outside of the Middle East. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Have you? So I'm just curious. So like, are there queer sections of in Indonesia of like, you know, where like when, you know, in certain neighborhoods, like in Vancouver, I am sure there's neighborhoods that you go to and that are pretty exclusively queer. In Indonesia, were there islands that were more queer than others? Were there cities more queer than others that at least people could have like gathering community?
The only two cities that popped up are Jakarta and Bali. Jakarta is the current capital city right now. It's extremely metropolitan. It's pretty much comparable, I guess, to New York. And Bali is this, you know, like island of God, which is very famous outside of Indonesia. And people, Balinese tends to be very more, much more chill. And as much as I guess like the public still don't really accept it, but like I'm sure there are like undercurrent of like gay, lesbian, queer people there. Like you can find like gay, lesbian bar in Bali. Though this is not something that I explore too much.
Okay. So when did you get interested in working with youth?
Like it's been like a decade ago. Like I've been working with youth. It's been probably close to a decade. I used to work as a youth worker, taking like a few youth to the community and showing them like social skills and stuff. Back in the day when I was still doing my undergrad. And then I worked with university students as well when I was like doing my university thingy. Actually working as a mission trip coordinator. This is
really?
Like back in the day before I embraced my queerness as well. And then, yeah, like that, I think it was a very easy, you know, like segue to work specifically with youth right now in my practice.
And so what kind of issues do you find coming up with queer youth? And, you know, what are some of the, so you're in Canada, you're in Vancouver, which is a pretty metropolitan city. So what are the problems that your kids are dealing with and facing?
The theme that I keep on seeing is actually like reconciling this confusion or like frustration, I guess, when they have internal experience that are debated or challenged by external reality, because like we live in a world where, you know, social media and mass media is like everywhere, and all these sources give us certain ideas about who we're supposed to be and how to get to a certain places and stuff. And one of the things that I notice with youth, and actually developmentally, rightfully so, because like if we think about like people developmentally as children, then we develop, like we had a glimpse of what the world is from our parents. And then when we hang out with other kids, that's when we kind of like interact with each other. And over time, you know, like kids develop their critical thinking. So over time, they just contrast, you know, like this is what mom and dad are telling me. This is what my teacher are telling me. But this is what the media I see are telling me. But this is what I want. You know, so just reconciling all of these things. And youth definitely don't want to be instructed, you know, like they, like I feel like sometimes I kind of know the answer and I just guide them through like a series of questionings towards there. But I'm not the one telling them. Through my series of questioning, like they realize, oh, actually, like this is what I want. This is where I'm supposed to go.
What kind of resistance? What kind? And my apologies. I keep saying Vancouver, but I just realized you're in Burnaby.
It's okay. It's very adjacent.
Okay, good. And is that like a suburb of Vancouver?
No, actually, like, no, we're not a suburb. We're like a neighboring city. I'm not sure how, like, how comparable it would be with like Manhattan and what is across the street, like
Queens or
Brooklyn.
Brooklyn, yeah.
Yeah, so it's like very close by.
Okay, all right. Is it a big city? Is it considered a big city or is it a big town? You know what I'm saying?
Like, it's a big city.
Okay. All right, so you're in a metropolitan area then.
Yes.
What I have found really interesting. So, you know, I say I work with people coming out later in life. And so you say you're later in life. So I'm curious, what age did you come out at?
Oh, I actually just realized that I'm turning 35 this year. So it was 30, like in my early 30s then.
Early 30s, yeah. So I always say that later in life is subjective. Like, it's a very subjective term. Like, so my youngest people that I've worked with have been 25, and my oldest have been over 70, you know? So they're 25 to 70, 75, you know?
Yeah.
And what has been really surprising for a lot of my clients, especially the ones between 20 and 33, 34, they have often been raised very, very progressive parents. Like, you know, they have been raised by progressive parents. Like, I had one woman that I had on the podcast. Her mother was the teacher that was in charge of the Gay Straight Alliance, GSA, at their high school, right? And when they came out, their parents had a very bad reaction.
So, are you in the process of coming out later in life? Are you feeling isolated or lost, cut off from friends and family, or just trying to figure out what is the next step for you? Well, I have a wonderful coaching program called Lotus Group Coaching. It is for people who are female identifying, cis or trans, or non-binary folks comfortable in those spaces. And we provide emotional, spiritual, and intellectual support for people who are in the process of coming out later in life. We discuss many things in our community, but what's most important is that you have a community of others who understand. Each one of the coaches in the program have come out later in life, and everybody who is a member of our program is somewhere in the process. So if you are seeking community and you want a soft place to land, go to my website, AmoryZanzel.com, and book a connection call. We would love to talk to you.
So I'm really curious about how your parent, like how the children that you see, how do their parents deal with their queerness? Are they wanting you to fix them? Or are you like, I don't know what's up with my kid. I need someone to help them.
Yeah. Not sure if this is like the work of branding as well, but it seems like I seem to attract people like families who are more like left-leaning, I would say, like more progressive, who are way more welcoming, who are more affirming. So in my practice so far, I'm not saying this doesn't exist because this very much does exist outside, but I actually do not have any teens or youth who come from like parents who are like very conservative.
So, but how do the progressive parents do? Are they, do you, does it, so what I have experienced, so is that sometimes they're shocked by their reaction. Like they believe that they're wonderful allies and really great supporters of the LGBTQ community. They have queer friends, they have lesbian friends, they have gay friends, but then their kid turns out to be a member of the family. And they're like, ooh.
Yes.
Ooh. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, I guess like based on my interaction with some of the parents, so far I get the impression that It's a lot to digest. Yeah, like it's definitely a lot to digest. And affirming and being an ally, I think it's a really great start. And I just feel like sometimes I just feel lost in this whole sea of like, what am I supposed to do now? I've been thinking actually like this past few months if it would be good to actually broaden my offering a little, because like so far I just specifically work with teen and youth, though like the extension of my beloved clients are their parents, and sometimes the parents feel overwhelmed and ended up seeing some stuff that are hurtful. And this is not coming from people like parents who want to hurt the kid, you know, like so this is really like, yeah, like I want to like that's what I guess like inspired me to like maybe diversify my offering a little and actually support the parents, because even if you're affirming but you don't know how to do that, you know,
Yeah,
like
you're just,
because I
it's just,
feel it's really new.
yeah, and the queer culture is a different culture. And so
It is.
even when you're an ally, because I was a fierce ally all these years and stuff like that, but until I became a member of the culture, there were so many things I was missing just because I didn't know. And I was also an ally that like supported at the ballot box, you know, supported, you know, donated money. But I lived in a very white, heteronormative town in Connecticut. And it, you know, I there were actually there was a lot of gay guys in my town because they owned second homes. And but I did not run in those circles, you know. So like I didn't have it, like if I saw somebody at the grocery store and, you know, and not hello and stuff like that. But it wasn't like in my friend group. And so for me, I was an ally, but didn't have a ton of queer friends, you know, and you know, except an occasional person here and there. But I didn't have a ton of queer friends, so I didn't have people to talk to, or also didn't know a lot about the community because I didn't have a lot of interaction with people that were actually queer. Have you ever thought about doing, like, I think for you, probably what would be great is a parents mutual support group, because that would work with those parents because they would have other parents they can talk about to their queer kid, about their queer kid who also has a queer kid. And everybody all gets it. Like they all get what it feels like to all of a sudden, because what happens for parents is that there can be grief because you grieve the life you thought your kid was going to have.
Oh my gosh, like there are like fireworks happening in my brain right now. You pretty much nail it in the head, because like my niche is actually gender identity, and that's are like gender diverse kids. And that's what I actually noticed, you know, like being understanding and supportive is a really great start, though like I feel like parents later on need some more support on like actually grieving over the loss of what they thought the kids was supposed to be, and navigating that, because like it's not on the kid to like help the parent like to heal. I mean,
Absolutely.
there is definitely, you know, like the synergy, it goes both ways, but I feel like parents also need to do a lot of the work and like even educating, like what, why is having the correct pronouns matter? What does this pronoun means to you? Because like even if someone identify as like she, they, and you misgender them, how is that gonna be? You know, like there are a shitload of questions basically that parents typically have.
Well, and as like, so my second child is non-binary, and even though I'm a member of the community, they identified a different way for 28 years of their life. So when they came out as non-binary, I knew I was grieving. Like, and but there's also not a lot of people to talk about too. I didn't care. I could care less whether my child was non-binary or not. And that was like, that was not the, I just was like, so like, for example, when people ask me, oh, you have, how many, do you have kids? Yes. How many, oh, what are they? That's the next question people ask. So I used to say two girls, two boys. Now I say I have one girl, one non-binary child, and two boys. And it's just a little transition. And in the beginning, it really felt like exhausting and a mouthful, you know, because I was used to saying two girls, two boys, right? But I'm used to it now.
Yeah.
You know, one of the things is that people have to understand that, yes, this is all new, but sometimes it just takes a matter of getting used to. Like it feels weird at first. Like when I first had to call my second child they, them, it took a while. And I'm somebody who works in this space. Mm-hmm. And I find that I have a really easy time calling them they, them when they're not around. And, when I'm talking to you, no problem. I call them they, them all day long. It's when they get together with their siblings. And I've always called her by the other pronoun. And then all of a sudden I'll say like X is, oh, she. And I'm like, when I'm by myself, I have no problem with the they, but when they get in together with the group of the other children, that's when I slip back into the old pronouns, because that's how, and I don't live with them. So I don't see them all the time, you know? So it's not like I can practice every single day. I find myself slipping. I give myself a lot of grace. They don't give me as much grace, but but I'm trying, honey, you know? So it's hard for parents. Mm-hmm.
It is.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you so much for actually sharing that portion of it. Like, I feel, I don't know, like, it's still like in the very planning stages, but I feel like it almost confirmed, like, the need is definitely there, you know?
There is a need. And it's also, there's a need for people to be able to just have other people that understand what it feels like to go through, even if you're a progressive, loving, accepting parent, there's a lot of change to accept. And sometimes it's just nice to have people to accept that change with you.
Yes. Yes. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And also, I love the power of storytelling. So a lot of times when you were in a group setting and, you know, a parent shares their story, the other parent hears it and they're like, oh, wait a minute, I've never thought about it this way before. And so storytelling can really change other people's view of things. So your job as the facilitator is just make sure everybody's safe. And that's it. So I think that's like a really wonderful way for people to connect around something that can be difficult. Mm-hmm. So my question for you is, so, and because most of my listeners are parents, a lot of them are parents of LGBTQ kids as well. They're queer, but their kids, one of their kids is queer too. How can you support your trans child when they're coming out? You're like, when your child is questioning their gender, what would your tips be?
Yeah, it can be mouthful. And the most important thing that I can think of right now, based on my interaction with clients, as well as like talking to a few parents, is be curious. Because I feel like there's enough judgment outside. And I think actually, even I'm sure before your little one muster the courage to tell you about it, like they've been wrestling with it for a long time.
Yes.
So like, and I also want to be mindful. I want to totally acknowledge that especially if you don't see it coming, like totally hold your own reaction. Like contain it in a space first. Like it's like don't suddenly like berate your kids or like ask them a million questions. Like just be curious and I guess like ask a few prompting questions and see where they're at. If they seem to be ready to like share a bit more, then you know, like ask them a few more prompting questions. Mm-hmm. But if they seem to just be comfortable with telling you that, hey mom, actually I identify as non-binary, but don't ask me any more questions than that, then that's the level of readiness at the time.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And then you go out and you start researching what all of
this is. Yes. Yeah. And like, I actually witnessed the most beautiful interaction happen when parents do their part in actually educating themselves. So not to expect the kid to be the one fully educating, you know, like the parents on every single scenarios out there. Because like, yeah, like educate yourself on this and that, and then confirm it with your kid, because this can actually be a really good pathways for you to have a different kind of conversation. Because like your relationship with your kid before this disclosure was one thing, and then after this disclosure, it opens up a different door to a different kind of dynamic.
Mm-hmm.
So you need a bridge.
What kind of dynamic are you talking about? Like when you, I think I believe, but I want you to use your words. Like, so like when you say this opens up a different dynamic, what do you exactly mean?
That your kid, this is just based on like by lens, by the way, like I kind of see that, you know, like non-binary, gender diverse kiddos. I feel like before they're coming up, they were almost lumped into the whole lump sum of this like cis hetero everything by the book, you know. But after this disclosure, I feel like they're almost someone else, because now I feel like the possibilities for them to be whoever they want to be is almost like limitless.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like there's almost a loss of control as well, you know, because like even like I personally, like I started using the term she, they, for example, and I actually feel better right now when someone addressed me as they, and not that I will like be get angry if someone referred to me as a she, her. But there's a certain flair, you know, when someone referred to me as they, but my version of they is different from another person who referred to themselves as they, them. And this is one thing that is like the limitless possibility part of it. Like a new dynamic then between you and your kids, because now then you need to keep on being curious with what, like what is happening with your kid, like what is in their world, you know.
And I also really want to affirm, I really love what you said about your care, your child can't be your caretaker because they're going through their own thing right now. And so really it's up to the parent to you know, find the resources and talk to people about this, because it's not your kid's responsibility to take care of you or take care of your grieving around this either. It's that's when you find a professional that can help you do this, or maybe a friend that is very open and understanding. So you said something in the beginning of our conversation about collectivist culture, and I am curious, I think I know what you mean, but what do you mean by that?
I personally see collectivistic culture as a culture that upholds the community, and there's way more consideration for how the other, like how your action will impact the other person. And we are really big in the whole saving phase, you know? So it's almost like my behavior and who I am to the public, if I misbehave, it actually tainted my family as well. And I guess there is a certain level of that as well in the individualistic culture, but I don't think it's going to be to that same magnitude.
I think because so as both people, both of us came out later in life, a lot of times people come out later in life because of internalized homophobia, but also because of there are often people pleasers, and they don't want to make anybody be uncomfortable or upset. And so even though we are in the West, and or, you know, in an individualistic culture here in the US and Canada, to me, I see a lot of pressure for people, especially in religious cultures, to maintain the collectivistic culture. So if somebody comes from, you know, an evangelical or a Catholic background, some of the Jewish traditions, you know, there is a big thing about saving face.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so how does this all intersect for you? I mean, because you identify as a person of color, and your personal identity, you know, with being a person of color and being somebody who comes from a collectivistic culture and now lives in an individualistic, like, When you think about that, how does that all intersect for you?
This is actually...
You're like, damn, why did I tell her to ask me that question?
Someone asked me that question 2 weeks ago during a conversation, and I've been mulling over that, and still, like, the version of me now, I'm still wrestling with that question, and I feel like my personal identity as a queer person, it's... I feel like I almost have two different identities, like the Nita that is broadcast, the version of Nita that is broadcasted in Canada, and the version of Nita that is broadcasted in Indonesia, because I feel like here I feel open, and if and without any intention to actually expect other people to accept me. So like, okay, like, I can still be friend with you, even if you don't disagree with a part of my queerness. But as soon as you want to shove a certain value down my throat, that's when I will, like, you know, like, draw the line. Mm-hmm. But in Indonesia, I feel like my tendency is to blend in. And I, like, I mentioned earlier, I don't necessarily look up, you know, like, gay bar, this and that, because I don't want to out myself.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, like, so that actually does bear the question, like, you know, like, what does coming out mean? You know, like, are there different levels of coming out as well?
But I also think, so like, for the women that I work with, it is a lot easier. Okay, so I moved from Connecticut to Nashville. I lived a very straight life in Connecticut. Nashville, I moved here as a gay woman. And so I moved here as a queer woman. I was already with my partner for about 18 months then. I'm in a lesbian relationship. So I moved here and it was so much easier. I get it. You know, it's just so much easier to show up as your full self in a new place without all the baggage that is in the old place. And so sometimes, like, first of all, I think we, like, in some countries, it's not safe to be queer. So if in Indonesia, it's not safe for you to come out because something might happen to you physically or something like that, then I wouldn't out myself, you know, because you're valuable and we need you. And so we don't need anything to happen to you because of, you know, because of the work you do and stuff like that. But do you think it has anything to do with that? Like, in the sense that when you go home, there are people that expect the old Nita. And if you show up as who you are, it's gonna be like, there, you know, I Love Lucy. There's a Lucy, you have some splaining to do. Like, you're gonna have to do some explaining to, like, okay, what's going on? And like, do your parents know? For example, are they alive and do they know? Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I mean, both of my parents are very much still alive. In my nuclear family, everyone except my dad is aware of this. So this is the other thing, like, actually, and I'm sure there are thousands of Nita out there who really scared like shit, opening up about this, like, this part of me 4 or 5 years ago for fear of being disowned.
Yes.
Because, like, it is shameful, you know, like, having a family member who is not a part of the heteronormative culture. And I guess both of my sisters are very open-minded, and so is my mom, you know, like, but I'm not gonna, I'm lying to you if I say it was easy, you know, like, because it was not easy. I scared like shit, actually, for the whole 1 week before I told them about this.
Yeah,
and so even this, like, yeah, like, I don't think anyone in that circle is going to watch this podcast. I was actually thinking about that, you know, but I'm like, I really doubt this podcast will reach, like, that pocket of population. And I do definitely want to share a portion of my story, because one message that I keep on wanting to just put out there is, like, you know, like, we as queer people, we just gotta, like, find our chosen family.
And have you done that?
Yeah, it's been like a progressive ongoing work since 4 years ago. And I actually feel that the landscape of my relationships have shifted dramatically because I was very Catholic. Like, I was devout Catholic, doing devotion, this and that, and was very, very active in the church group, this and that, you know. And as I was wrestling with this, it was in the beginning, 1.5 years, I guess. I was like in and out, but then like, yeah, like at some point I just decided that if my viewpoint and the whole me is not welcome here in this space, then this space is not for me, because I felt there was so much shame.
So I want to ask you about another intersectionality. One of the reasons I only work with women is, and I work with trans, cis, and non-binary women, non-binary people comfortable in female spaces. And one of the reasons I do is because 80% of the women I work with come from conservative religious backgrounds. So I want to talk about the intersectionality of being a woman in a conservative religion. Because oftentimes we have to let go of what it means to be a woman in the conservative areas, or we can embrace our queerness. For me, my like, I was raised Catholic. I went to Catholic schools. You know, I was you know, it was really a big part of my life. I was a Catholic as an adult. I left Catholicism about the same age as you, about 35. And so, like, unpacking what I was told to be a woman, like, to myself last, to put my needs last, to serve my family, to have a lot of kids, which I did. I did that very well. To unpack that, like, I did not realize like how ingrained all those messages were into me until I left. So how did you start to unpack those messages as someone who was, identified as female as when you were born? How did you start to say, wait a minute? Like, because roles for women in the church are being a missionary. I'm sure if you had been born assigned male at birth, you might have been a priest. You know, so how did you unpack all of that?
Ooh, that's we're asking some really great question, and this is actually like a material for content for me for my future blog post. The notion of gender identity and how to be a woman or how to be a person, to be honest, is something that I still actively unpack, because starting around the same time when I embraced my queerness, I started actually questioning, because in religion, we're just told what to do, right? We are inculcated with a certain set of values, and we just got to agree with that. And I started unpacking that, the verse, God is love, and just seeing the discrepancy of how queer people were treated versus the cis hetero people were treated, was actually, I wrestled with that for quite a bit. And then this is something related more to the Christianity in general. And there were times when I offered to pray for someone, and I got this side glances as of oh, is your prayer gonna be as legit, because you're gay? And that's the stick. And I think the thing that I am still wrestling with was actually questioning, why is the kind of thing that I can do or what I am supposed to do are so defined by gender? Why does this so-called gender then limit or define the parameter of what I can or cannot do in the world? Because aren't we supposed to just be able to just show up and be acknowledged based on our own merit,
You know, and I think that's one of the biggest things is like coming out and being part of the queer community is that it has really given me a lesson about gender more than anything. Because I was always like in the beginning of all this years before I came out, you know, I was always wondering why the T was in the LGBT, you know? And as time went on, I really sort of realized, and because oftentimes people, there's a bunch of reasons, but a lot of times people start with sexuality when they begin to explore this, and then they come to realize that it's more about gender for them, but sexuality is the point in which oftentimes they can enter the conversation. I find this particularly true for older people. It may be different for youth and younger people. But I also have found that, so in now that I am in a 100% lesbian relationship, is that my wife and I don't have roles assigned. In my straight heteronormative relationship, I definitely had a very assigned role. Very assigned. And if I wanted anything for myself, or some, you know, it was a big deal. It was just a big deal. But in this relationship, my wife and I take on different roles in every aspect of our lives. In the household, who brings in the money, in the bedroom, in every aspect of our lives, we have we take on the binary role. Well, it's more than binary, but we take on the roles of, you know, different things. And there, I am not just assigned the role of being the woman in the relationship. And I agree with you. It has been unbelievably freeing. I think it is the most, like, I feel sorry sometimes for heterosexual women, like truly heterosexual women that like really love men and stuff like that. Because yes, they get a tremendous amount of privilege from that, but they don't experience the freedom of being able to choose who they want to be a lot of times. You know?
And I would say actually, like, as we were talking, the initial like nudge was like when I was with my ex and we had conversations, and I remember her being really upset when someone asked us like, so who are the pants in the relationship, you know? And we basically just both look at each other and like, I don't know. We both wore it. And then like discussions, like you said, like surrounding chores and who will bring in the money and, you know, like support this and that. Cause I feel like in the society at large, it's very defined, you know, like women's role is just in the kitchen.
It still is.
Yeah. You know, so like, and I don't believe in that. Like, I mean, I want to have the freedom. I don't want to be relegated to just be a housewife or be the one who bring in the money. Yeah, I don't think it really matters.
Yeah, I don't think it matters either. But I do think the queer community, the LGBTQ community, gives you space to do it. While it's it, and if you have that in your straight, if in the straight world, or in, and that's very unusual, where there's equal sharing of the responsibilities within the relationship. Now, there's some queer relationships where somebody's the stay-at-home mom and somebody goes out to work too. It's not all queer. We're not a monolith. We don't have an agenda. You know? But, you know, but I have found a lot of freedom in that. And that's what I've really loved. And I what I'm hearing you say is that you have found a lot of freedom in embracing, you know, non-binary, being non-binary. It's given you an opportunity to explore things that if you had stayed in your good Catholic girl role, you would not have been able to do.
Yeah, because like I'm still very single right now. And you know, like there is talk about chastity, this and that. So like from a Catholic standpoint, like, do I stay chaste, you know, like in order to be with God kind of thing? Like, well, I'm single not because I want to keep my chastity, but more so because like there's just no one right now, you know, like, and I'm waiting for the right fit. So I think it just depends on like what angle you're looking at it. But yeah, like I've been like a professor actually like told me a while back, like, you know, like for us deconstructionists, like we are deconstructing our belief in order to reconstruct it. And I feel like
Yes.
I'm still actively reconstructing. And it felt really freeing, actually, to like I'm still a part of a life group. And after being with them for like what 2+ years, I finally mentioned to them what happened. Though also like last week, it was just last week, my spiritual mentor, spiritual director, just let go of me just because I'm queer. But we've been meeting for over 9 years.
Wow.
Over my TikTok post about International Women's Day. And I was actually just saying like, oh, like you get to define how to be or not to be a woman. And then on the caption, I just elaborated a bit more and like there are more than one ways for us to be a woman. So I actually was not like belittling or seeing anything wrong about one way to be a woman. I did not condemn, oh, if you're just a mother nursing your kid, it's wrong. And I'm like, no, actually, I wasn't. I said that, but not in a condemning way. And I'm like, there are more than one ways to be a woman.
Yeah, there is more one way. Yeah.
Yeah. And this mentor person said like, that was the straw that breaks the camel's back, you know, but we've been meeting for over 9 years and for of which, like she was fully aware that I'm queer.
Mm-hmm. That must have been very hard, honey.
It was. And this is where like chosen family was really, you know, like they stepped in and my community showed up for me.
Well, I'm glad you got support because I'm sure that was pretty shocking. It probably was very shocking, especially someone who's been a mentor for 9 years. That's a long time.
There's no way I could see it coming, Anne-Marie. That's as far as I can tell you.
So I end this program. So let's end this program on what I always end it. So do you have a coming out song?
Actually, I always like listening to You Want. Is it You Want to Calm Down?
You Need to Calm Down.
You Need to Calm Down by Taylor Swift. I would say two, like You Need to Calm Down and Born This Way.
Are you a Swiftie?
Ish. I appreciate her music because like she does write from the heart, though I'm not sure if I'm willing to like pay that much money for the concert.
Yeah, absolutely. I like Taylor Swift. I think she does some amazing things. It must be really hard to live your life under a microscope. That's all I'm gonna say. And she does the best she can.
Yeah, she does.
So a book or a movie that changed your life or your perspective on life?
I'm sure there are still like a lot more that I want to read, but I remember reading a biography by, is it Luna or Joshua Ferguson? I think it's Me, Myself, and They. I also covered it in my Instagram post. And I Am Jazz by Jazz Jennings. There are still a lot of like other books that I want to read though.
Yeah. So it's interesting because the last question I ask on the Google form that I give all my guests is, how would you describe your life today? And you said, I'm stuck on this. I'm going to have to reflect on that. And so today we're taping this on March 26, 2024. How would you describe your life today?
I very much live in existent community and I chose members of my community and I showed up for them and they showed up for me. It's a very much it's a synergy and a reciprocal kind of like relationship. And this is what a good friend of me actually mentioned, that I find beauty in simplicity.
That's wonderful. So in parentheses on the screen, it says you are the spunky counselor. How'd you get that name?
I kind of wish I got that name earlier on, like when I launched my website, but I believe that everything has its own timing. I kind of rake my brain to actually come up with like a catchy name for my Instagram handle. And I was asking myself, you know, like, what is the adjective that a few people have mentioned about me? Mina, you're spunky. You're so spunky. You know? So that's where I'm like, I'm people refer to me as Spunky, and I'm a counselor. The Spunky counselor, you know?
Well, I can see why they call you Spunky. As someone who's only known you for 1 hour, you definitely are Spunky. I get it. I get why people call you that. You have Spunky energy. You really do. And you have a Thank great you. Laugh. You have a great laugh. So
thank you.
Now's the time to do the promotions. So where can people find you? And how should they connect with you?
Yeah. Check out my website. It might be in the link below in the podcast.
Go ahead.
Yeah, it's Nita Augustine Counseling, though if you're on social media as well. I have the same handle on YouTube, TikTok, and Instagram, but I am most active on Instagram. I welcome you to find me at The Spunky Counselor. And feel free to, check out my resources and DM me if you have any questions at all.
Well, thank you, Nita. It was wonderful to interview you today and spend this last hour with you. Good luck with everything. Good luck helping all those kids out there. And also, I want to just say that you're new, like it's been only several years for you, on this journey of deconstructing all of this of what it means for you personally. And it just takes a while. It just takes a while. It takes, I was just talking to somebody, we were talking about, Nita and I were talking before this show about how you get themes of the week. And there was somebody who I was a new prospective client, and she said she had been out 18 months. And I was like, it just takes a while. Like, it's not going to all fall in place within a couple of months or even a couple of years. I find that I'll never forget when I first started coming out. A friend of mine who had two daughters that were gay, she was straight. She said to me, it's going to take about 8 years. And honestly, she was right. It took about 8 years to feel completely comfortable in my skin and sort of figure out all the stuff that I had to deconstruct. So it just takes a while and it's okay. It's okay. Especially when people hurt you too, because those are setbacks along the way, mm-hmm. So thank you very much for spending time with me. I appreciate it.
You're most welcome. Thanks for having me.
You've been listening to Coming Out and Beyond, LGBTQIA+ Stories with Anne-Marie Zanzel. New episodes of the Coming Out and Beyond podcast drop every other Friday. You can tune in at Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, and at annemariezanzel.com. Be sure to hit subscribe when tuning in so you never miss an episode. And for more resources, articles, videos, and a free downloadable guide for coming out later in life, visit annemariezanzel.com.